The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
My next guest is part of a Canadian show that could be described as a mix between the Great British Bake Off and chainsaws. John Hayes is a chainsaw artist. Actually, John, will we play a clip from the show before just to give people a sense of
what it
is?
Go ahead.
It's not hard to describe, but it could be hard to imagine.
Welcome to the forest.
The wood's alive. It tells you what to do.
It's a chainsaw.
They've got 7 hours to create a masterpiece.
This is speed powering at its best.
This is when the nerves kick in.
Just keep going, keep going.
Looks like Ryan just knocked a chunk of his pinky off.
I had hair before all this started.
The carvers who can't hack it will be axed from the competition.
Yes, come on.
It's like MasterChef, but with chainsaws.
I definitely cried, yes.
A Cut Above. Available now on Sky History.
There you go. That is called A Cut Above for obvious reasons. It involves chainsaws. John Hayes is from the southeast. He's from County Waterford. And he has been part of season one as a contestant. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I was one of 12 that made it to battle it out over 12 weeks. And as you said, it was like Bake Off meets chainsaws, which is a strange way of putting it. But the idea was that it was the first ever chainsaw TV show that could show what we actually do when we compete against each other. But
okay. But
it was ridiculous. They had us to do these challenges in a very short period of time. So it was all really to do with the speed, which caused a little bit of danger and a little bit of mayhem. But to represent Ireland against other people from around the world was fantastic.
And that
me.
Was back in 2022. How did you do in that one? Or is that the way it works?
We went through auditions and all sorts of rigmarole where they psychologically evaluate you and see if you're up for it. But we filmed that just outside Whistler, where if people saw Dumb and Dumber, that area just outside Vancouver, up in the mountains, they built a Coliseum. And it was really strange to walk into an arena and then have that amount of cameras on you and stuff, you know, because normally I work away in a workshop on my own doing commissions and you're kind of in your own little world listening to a bit of music and figuring it out. But now all of a sudden every mistake was the big moment for the camera to catch, you know. But you just kind of got on with it. The challenges were unbelievable, really.
The
first one was, of course, they wanted to mess with your emotions. So it was like they want you to describe yourself in a sculpture.
Oh.
And I kind of been honest, my dad had just passed away on Christmas Day. And then we went into the following year to film it. And so emotionally, I was all over the place, which was probably the most ridiculous carving to ever try do on TV. Because the brain just didn't work. The hands didn't work. And I tried to do so much because you're trying to describe your experience and what your dad meant to you. So it was ridiculous. So we did it. That went out on the first episode and I hung in just by the skin of my teeth, to be honest. But after that, then we get the wind behind me and I kind of get the knack of it. But they gave us challenges
we had to
stuff like where they gave us a small little creature and we had to supersize it. And you had 7 hours to do it. Other ones were kind of to do with, you had to pick two random pieces out of a box and one was fire, one was ice, and then you had to come up with a sculpture that represented that.
Okay.
So the challenges then, we had to make bowling balls, we had to make little small cars. There's loads of fun stuff in it. Which I really enjoyed, to be honest.
And am I right in thinking that from your work, which if people know it, you probably see it in New Ross near the Brandon House Hotel.
We done the big boat down there,
there in Fenner, where you're from, outside.
Yeah, it was
Tremor,
the original
County
one,
Waterford.
The Hope, yeah. That's where it all began nearly 10 years ago.
Absolutely stunning.
From a back-to-work scheme.
So that is a tree that was hit by lightning, am I right?
Yeah, well, what happened, it got damaged, and they were going to cut it down, and that's actually how it began. So if you're one of these people out here and you have one of these mad imaginations and you think, oh, there's something to do, well, chainsaw carving really snuck up on me. And I don't think
I'd want chainsaw carving to sneak
but
up
But I never
on
had
me.
A chainsaw even, do you know?
Really?
No, never had one. And what happened was I was doing a play park in Fenner at the time with the community out there. We'd done this Fenner play park, which everyone loves now, and we changed the way it was done. But the guy I done that with was Christy from Creative Play in Galway. And he asked me to design it, and he said to me, "You're handy enough for coming up with ideas, you know." He said, "Would you be able to make me a big wooden face?" And I went, "I'd give it a go."
I know that wooden face. Yeah.
I did that, and I started with a hatchet and chisels, and it was taking me forever. And one of my friends, Tony Dial, came in, a carpenter friend of mine. And he said to me, "I saw it on YouTube, these fellas doing the stuff with chainsaws." So I rang Jerry Pearson. So I said, "Hey, Jerry, give us the end of a chainsaw." And I went out, nearly killed myself in the process. And made this face, and people thought it was cool. And,
wow.
And,
so and then you decided to go up a big tree?
And then I was walking with, I was coming back one day with my daughter Molly. We were walking, well, she was young at the time, we were walking back up from the playground, and I see the boys getting ready to cut the tree down. And it was a 300-year-old tree in the Fenner graveyard. And I said to the local committee lads there, I said, I'm on a back-to-work scheme. I said, "Would you let me go at that?" And in fairness, the chap John Supple, who ran the back-to-work scheme, "Do you think you can do it?" I said, "I don't know, but I'll give it a go." Like, so I said, "The worst thing can happen is it could be chopped into firewood."
Yeah, or you'll fall off.
And don't worry, there was plenty of times. Health and safety was far from me at the time, but we've learned since then. But we started carving tree angels.
And it's phenomenal.
And that was it. Then I actually... the local radio station picked it up. Then then RTE and the different and French TV came over. And before I knew it, I was starting to get phone calls.
Amazing.
And this business just appeared.
Now you've travelled the world with it.
Yeah, I kind of got to a certain level in Ireland where I was kind of going, how do I get better at this? And there was only a few of us doing it. Richie Clark in Mead, and there was another, Will Fogarty in Limerick and stuff. We were all kind of tipping on, and there was only a few of us. So to get better, then I decided I'd go to the UK and take on some of the UK guys in the regional competitions.
Oh, okay. So there are competitions you can go to. Okay.
Yeah. And we'd done that, and then I was lucky enough to win one of them. And then I got a wild card to the world champion events. And I'd done that, and I finished fourth. And then that got me to the US, and then that got me to Canada, and then that got me to all around the world,
and
really.
This is your full-time job now, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. I'm doing it now 10 years, and we do commissions all over the country, and I'm after doing commissions all over the world now. But it's bizarre to think that, like, here you are one day just sitting down trying to wonder how you're going to pay your ESB bill, and 10 years later you're in a TV show.
And isn't it such an example of, you could have said, no one will let me go at that tree. Like, that could have been your thought process. But instead of, you thought, sure, I'll ask and see what they say.
Yeah, well, it is that. But I often find now, my experience from it is there's loads of people out there that are hugely talented, right? But opportunity is very slim on the thing.
Yeah.
And we suffer a lot with that in Ireland and in the Southeast especially. We have some of the most talented people I've ever come across. And it's creating an opportunity to show that is what we often... And I always kind of say to me kids, if I go into a school to talk to lads, because I left school at 13, you know, couldn't read, couldn't write, any of that. Went back when I was 30 to learn all that stuff, because my daughter realised that I was telling her stories that weren't in the book. I was making them up.
Okay.
So I always had that kind of chip, like, I could do that. So I was hyperactive, wanting to express myself in a way. So the chainsaw carving was probably, I had done stuff with Spree and Red Kettle over the years and all that type of theatre stuff, but this was finally something I had done for myself.
Yeah.
And what I noticed in the journey of it was really down to you and you just finding something that inspired you to do it. So everyone's sitting in that car and they're in work at the moment and you have that thing, and it's not about going and setting the world alight in 2 weeks. It's about just constantly tipping away at it.
Yeah.
It might be only 20 away.
It
was the opportunities, and I found that it was the small little doors. It wasn't the big flashy lights like our X Factor, like, funnily, you know, that's what these shows are kind of based around. But it was the small little door, little small feeling you get in your belly.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of started following that, and started following it not for the reason to get your likes and people to tell you were great. It was because I just wanted to see, could I finish it? Could I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting more back. I started getting, you know, more reward for it.
Brilliant.
So now I say to lads, if you have it, be ready for the bus pulling up.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be whinging that you didn't get a chance to get on the pitch.
Yeah.
Or you didn't. But when they call you, regardless if it's just that one moment that someone didn't turn up to work or they didn't, be ready to do it.
And
have it. And say yes and take the opportunity, because they don't come for everybody. And I was very lucky, you know.
And now you're a judge on Cosh Above.
Well, I'm going back to be a judge, and I'm going to judge the World Championships which is kind of that's nice for me in the sense of your peers finally recognizing.
So, where are you,
you
doing that?
So, we'll head back to it was in Wisconsin by Green Bay, but it's actually been moved to New York now. So, we're going to be doing it in New York this year.
And, and then with the TV show, what do you do? You go
back? Yeah, we're heading to Montana with that. So, that's after being great. Look, I'm after being living on reservations.
What do you do? You judge people when you get to Montana?
Yeah, well, the competitions, there'll be 40 of the best from around the world. You'll have them from Mongolia, South America, China, Japan, everywhere, really.
And they're all going to be on the television show?
They'll all. Well, the only problem is they don't air over here.
Yeah, it's massive
in Canada. You might get it on your Skybox. Well, you'll definitely get the Cut Above on Sky. It's actually on the Skybox. It's on Blaze 164. It's actually running at the moment. So that's on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock and repeats on the Saturday
morning.
That's the one that's on at the moment. And that'll give you a flavour of what Chainsaw Carving is.
Okay.
And we've done it this year down in Wexford in Kennedy Park. We've done the Celtic Carvers.
Okay.
And we brought some of the guys from the TV show here.
Brilliant.
And we're hoping to bring them back this year in a bigger scale again.
Okay, good stuff. Tell us where people can see you. So as we said, the Brandon House Hotel, you have the sculpture that's there.
Yeah.
Then Fenner is the original one.
That's
but you
it,
said there's a Wavy Lady as well. You were
saying
off
there. Oh, we have the Wavy Lady down by
that?
The Dunbrody. That's in Wexford. But then around Dublin then, there's probably 50 sculptures around Dublin, Cool Cullen, all of that type of stuff.
So where's the best place for people to see you online? Are you on Instagram?
Yeah, you'll find me at Special Branch Carvers.
Okay.
And if you have an interest in any type of wood carving, and give me a shout. We're very approachable. And if there's anybody out there that kind of wanted to get the idea of what it is to be creative and how you take a creative idea and make a few bob out of it, it's hard. It's a hard thing. And as I said, I was lucky, but I'm always at the end of a phone or message me and we'll have a chat with you about it. Because for me, as I said, to come from somebody that worked in coal yards and bike shops and all of that stuff to end up then to making your living and making art is I'm very lucky. So if you're out there and you want to do it, and there's so many young people now, and that's the thing, I'm kind of pulling away from the competing side of it, and that's why the judging is a lot easier in one way, because the young people coming up now are just phenomenal.
Wow, okay.
They really are, and they have the energy to do it.
You have lots of photos of your work on that Instagram page. It is Special Branch Carvers if you want to check out John Hayes' work. He is a chainsaw artist. I'm almost afraid to ask you about injuries. Any injuries?
A few over the years, but as time goes on, obviously the safety element of it. Naively in the beginning you make a lot of boo-boos because you don't listen to the saw. It's like listening to an instrument and you can hear it getting ready to pop, you know.
Okay.
And when I was on that Angel in Fenner, I remember trying to do things with saws that you're not supposed to do.
Oh, okay.
So we went off, done a few courses. I'd recommend that. Get a good helmet, safety gloves, safety pants and good boots and you'll have some chance to survive.
And there you go. And John says you can get in contact with him if you're interested as well. That Instagram account is Special Branch Carvers or specialbranchcarvers.com. John, congratulations from a contestant on a TV show in Canada to a judge to go into lots of competitions around the world thanks to 10 years ago and an almost fallen tree in Fenner in County Waterford. Thanks a million for joining me this morning.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It is the Sunday Grill here on Beat 102-103. And a quirky one for you now. The country's first ever clock auction is taking place in Waterford tomorrow. It's a collection of more than 300 clocks and they're being auctioned in the Museum of Time in Waterford City. There's things like wall clocks, mantel clocks, even grandfather clocks that you don't see much of anymore, and they all go on sale tomorrow. Thomas Cleary even is from RJ Cleary Antiques, and he joins us to tell us more. You're very welcome, Thomas.
Hi, Orla.
So you're going somewhere different because it's usually in your venue, isn't it? Your auctions.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that they're held in our venue, but I suppose now things have changed as well. Most people bid live online, you know, so people kind of come in person, but the vast majority actually watch it and bid live online. So.
Okay, and this is an interesting one because I suppose our uses, especially of watches and clocks, are diminishing a bit, aren't they?
I suppose now that we're used to checking the time on our phone and on our smart watches, that I suppose maybe clocks aren't as common or aren't as used. This is quite a unique collection of clocks. There's 300 clocks. All from one house, which is quite amazing.
And where was that house?
The house was a very nondescript three bedroom bungalow in the Midwest, just outside Limerick.
Okay. All right. And they had
very nondescript. And yeah, it was just jam packed with clocks. It was a man that he was collecting clocks over 50 years.
OK. And when we say 300, we actually mean over 380 of these.
Yeah,
clocks.
We did a count. There's about 270 wall clocks and 31 grandfather clocks.
Wow. OK.
Yeah. Most people, if you're lucky to have one wall clock or one grandfather clock, if you had a big house, but this man packed them in.
He had 30 of them.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. And what sort of people do you expect at the auction then tomorrow?
Again, there's been quite a lot of interest throughout Ireland and throughout Europe. So I think it's going to be a mix. One good thing about this auction, I suppose, is that there's a really good spread of clocks, even if you have a mild interest to, if you're, I suppose, a clock nerd. There's kind of clocks here for you. There's some really, really rare ones, but then there's also some kind of normal ones, if you wanted to dip your toe in the water into getting into collecting or getting an interest into old clocks.
And what prices are we starting from with these?
Yeah, again, I suppose people might think in their head old grandfather clocks, they may think of thousands. But to be honest, nearly all the clocks will make, and you'll pick up a grandfather clock from 200 to 300 euro. You'll pick up a nice old wall clock, 50, 80, 100 euro. So, again, that's kind of mostly the prices of them. So, again, they're there to be sold and hopefully people get a bargain.
Barometers as well, I see.
We do, yeah. There's about 25, I think I counted. Again, big ones as well. And to be honest, they're one thing that have really stood the test of time, no pun intended, with this auction in mind. They're always popular. People always like them as a nice feature. And especially what we find is people who live on the coast, on the southeast, what we find if you live on the coast...
Yes. You need a barometer.
You tend to look at them more, maybe.
Definitely.
You know?
And tell me, are they all quite beautiful and ornate, or was he quite eclectic in what he was buying?
Yeah. I suppose there was no rhyme or reason to the clocks. There's some really, really beautiful old Georgian clocks. So we have clocks here from 1770 upwards to kind of 1950. So there's about 150 years of a spread in terms of the design of clocks, but there's some beautiful old cases here, solid mahogany, oak cases, there's walnut cases. So yeah, really, really beautiful craftsmanship that you really don't see anymore.
Okay, and when people are interested in this, the sort of people you see buy it, are they collectors or, you know, people who might be thinking it'll fit into the house? It'll
some
nice.
Collectors, yeah. I've had one man who came in, he said, I actually have more clocks. I had more clocks than this man. So he's looking to add to his collection.
Okay.
But the vast majority, I think, are people who are just looking for a cool feature that, as I said, I don't think you'll ever see an auction like this again.
No.
So again, it's a great opportunity if you ever had a small inkling for an old clock. And I kind of think as well, even in our business with an antique furniture, especially with younger people, I think they are dropping that one quirky piece, that one piece that is a bit different into their house or into their room. That they're not decking out their whole house in antiques, but they're mixing and matching a bit more. So,
And people can view the catalogue online if they want to have a look at it. It's auctions.antiquesireland.ie. And as you said, you can bid online as well, can't you?
You can indeed. So you can tune into the auction tomorrow. If you go on our website, antiquesireland.ie, you'll be able to watch the whole auction. Myself and Rody will be on the rostrum. It'll be a bit of crack. And we'll be going through it all day. We'll start at 10 and we'll sell around 60 to 70 lots an hour.
Wow. So. Okay. Good stuff. So that's 10 a.m. tomorrow. That's January the 13th. 380 clocks from one person's house. So you can just imagine how crowded that house was and cluttered that house was. But some really lovely pieces, and you can see some of them, as Thomas said, at antiquesireland.ie, and doing it in a really quite apt venue, the Museum of Time in Waterford City. Thomas, best of luck with it, and thanks a million for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Beat 102-103 on this Sunday morning. Well, Christmas is well and truly over. The decorations are down, I hope. The tree is felled. But you might be still feeling like you live in a life of, well, or a home even, of just clutter, extra toys and wanted presents, things that you bought in because you thought you need three of them. Well, just stuff can really affect our mood. And that's where Southeast woman Liz Keogh comes in to help. She's a feng shui enthusiast and a declutterer, and she's going to give us some much needed advice. And you're very welcome to the Sunday Grill, Liz.
Good morning, Orla. Thank you so much.
Do you live in, do you live in an uncluttered paradise, my dream?
Yes and no. It's a mixture. I have four children, 23 down to 16.
Okay.
And like everybody has clutter, but certainly when you have children. So we've hurls and helmets, and my husband works outside in agribusiness. So he has lots of wellies and coats for all sorts of weathers, and we've sheep and chickens and all that. So look at every aspect of your life brings clutter.
Of course.
But it's, I suppose, how we manage it and how we organise it. And the best way to organise clutter in a lot of cases is actually to get rid of it, Orla.
Yes, which is hard for some people. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But you might start by telling us all about how you got into the business of decluttering. How did it all start for you?
Yeah, well, how it started was when I got married and I moved into this house, and very, very old house with a lot of history. Between our eldest child being born and the last child to be born in this house was nearly 100 years. So they didn't have children or grandchildren. So they didn't pass on their stuff, or their stuff wasn't divided out between family members. So everything was kept, I'd say about 150 years worth of stuff.
And how did that make you feel?
I didn't realize it at the time how it made me feel, because obviously I was young. I got just got married, and we'd started to do up the house in different stages.
Okay,
and
we
lived in the house. We did the house up as we lived in it, but life threw a few different curveballs at us as well. In the early years. And so we were kind of, we hit the ground running with life as such as well. And then I became pregnant on our eldest chap, and then went on to have three more children, and they were very busy. They were very active.
Okay. And so were you kind of adding to the stuff that was already there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Mm. It was layers upon layers and layers. But no one has shown us how to get rid of this stuff, how to let it go. We build up all this stuff in our houses through all, and by the way, we live in a consumption society.
Totally.
It's in every facet. And but look at Orla, nobody has shown us how to get rid of the stuff, and nobody has said it's okay to get rid of the stuff.
And how does that stuff make us feel, Elizabeth? I know how it makes me feel, but how do we describe that?
Well, how I describe it is that it's there. Everything, we are attached to everything we own. Clutter, everything has energy, okay? So everything has energy within it, and we're attached to that energy. So if you have lots of piles of stuff that you're not using, it becomes stagnant energy. And when you're looking at stuff, it does affect us. Everything we own. Everything we own is connected to us. Everything, and actually, we think we own the stuff, but the stuff also owns us. That's how interconnected we are with it. And if you look at it, I bought this horrible dress to wear to my brother's wedding, right? And when I had it hanging up in the wardrobe for a long, I spent a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And obviously, I didn't have any mates and I didn't have a mother, but I certainly had no mirrors that day that I bought it. But every time I looked at it, I went, oh, Jesus, I have to look at that. I got rid of it so I don't have to look at it.
Yes,
okay. I felt guilty after all the money I spent. But so clutter makes you feel guilty. It makes you feel ashamed. It makes you feel that you, and also as well, because we've so much social media as well, you're looking at these people with fabulous houses and you're thinking, why can't I be like that? And then it's another thing to beat yourself with. It's another thing.
So where do you start then, Liz? Where can people start today if they're thinking, that is me? What advice would you give to people?
Start whatever you do, just start. And it doesn't matter where you start. Look at low-hanging fruit. So low-hanging fruit is, make sure you get your decorations, your Christmas decorations up off the floor, up to where you store them, whether it's the attic or wherever else, mostly the attics in Ireland. But low hanging fruit is get that black plastic bag. If there's stuff recycling, you have a bag for the recycling. If there's a bag for rubbish, start small, 5 minutes at a time. When you're boiling the kettle, look in your cutlery drawer. If you have in your cutlery drawer a whole lot of knives that you don't use or that are blunt or different things that you don't use, get rid of it.
Do you get rid of it? You just put it into a bag, and where would that go then?
Get it out into your car, bring it to the recycling shop.
Okay.
I live in outside Enniscorthy. There's a great recycling centre, so I would always choose charity shop, the recycling centre, and then, or ask friends. Now, sometimes if you're starting new with decluttering, don't start trying to give things to everybody and find homes for things, because then that will bog you down.
And then, Liz, how do you, so you've decluttered the things you know you don't need. How do you stop this happening again? The process starts again. We're being bombarded by ads on social media for all the things that we need. How can we actually give ourselves a break when it comes to putting stuff into our house and cluttering our house again?
Yeah, well, I use a great phrase here, and I don't know if it's actually original to me. Shop your house. So when you take down all the Christmas decorations, you say, God, that shelf looks very bare. Or, oh, Janie, I thought I had more. You know, where to shop your own house. Walk around your own home. Shop your own house. Try and find activities rather than going to the, you know what I used to love, going around TK Maxx. But try and find something else to do rather than going around the shops. Also as well,
and what do you mean by shop your house? Like kind of move stuff around so it's not...
Move stuff around.
Okay.
And numerology. Numerology, they say if you move 27 things in your home, so if you go into your sitting room and move 27 things in your sitting room, they say that the energy changes. So,
and as I said at the start, you're an enthusiast of feng shui. Just give us a couple of things there, Liz, that would help us in our house to make it feel like it's less cluttered and has a better flow to it almost.
You know, the feng shui is about the flow and the energy flow within your home. And do not do anything with feng shui until you have cleared your clutter. And actually, a lot of people find that when they clear their clutter, their lives improve automatically. But I'm, you know, in feng shui terms, what it means is that each part of your home relates to an aspect of your life. With feng shui, always keep the lid of your toilet down.
Okay.
All your, you know, because you never heard the expression when you're worrying about that the money is draining away, or you know, you're flushing money down
so
the toilet.
So just little things like that, and any other little things like that, keeping your toilet down.
Never park in front of your front door. As regards, try not to block your front door, because you're allowing your blessings in. And if you have a lovely front door, use it.
Okay.
And in my workshops, I've had women saying, God, I put up my Christmas tree in the front door. We've never opened it. I don't even know where the key is to open our front door. But what I would suggest to people is try and open it a couple of times a week. But if you're just walking in with your car keys and your phone in your hand, go in through your front door.
Okay.
Just open that energy. What do we do every New Year's Eve? We open the front door to welcome in the new year, and we open the back door to let it out.
Okay.
It's a kind of an energy flow. So that's what. So every day is a new day. Every day is a new day in a new year. So open your front door.
Some really good points there. And as you mentioned, you do workshops. So your workshops are in your home, are they? Or where do you have those?
They are. Well, you see, because I've kind of, they're very small, intimate workshops is what I'd say. I haven't gone global yet, Orla. So I have them in my home here. And I suppose like that, if you know, if we want to go bigger, we can go bigger, or we can, you know, organize with that. But I have people and they come and they get to understand how much their clutter affects them.
Okay.
Some people have light bulb moments and they go away thinking, oh, my God. One woman went away and she cleared out so much clutter. Her husband said to her, why didn't you go down to see Liz Keogh 10 years ago? So our clutter does affect us. And it's only when you start clutter clearing that you realize how much it does affect you.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me here, I had predecessor clutter. I had so much other. And also things can have negative connotations. You know, there's different energies attached to stuff. If you got a stereo from an ex-boyfriend 30 years ago, and you still have that stereo sitting in the room, but the relationship went bad, or you have... That stereo, every time you look at it, it's kind of reminding you of that time in your life.
Even though you might have forgotten where you got it, it still has that element to it. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. So.
Good stuff, Liz. Well, you're going to be putting up when you'll be having your next workshops as well. So if you search for Elizabeth Keogh Front Door Blessings on Facebook, you'll find Elizabeth there as well. And she has lots of advice on decluttering as well. And workshops upcoming as well, Elizabeth, for 2025.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thanks for all that advice this morning and for joining us on the Sunday Grill, and have a lovely rest of the year.
Thank you so much, Orla. I really appreciate that.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Your music now, it is Beat 102-103. Well, I'm going to bring back maybe bad or good memories for you right now. CAO applications, remember them? University choices, even thinking about it brings back those feelings of stress for me. So if you're in the midst of that CAA process this month, Fear not, because Liz Kelly is a career guidance counsellor with over 10 years experience of working for students and parents. And she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning to help us. You're very welcome, Liz.
Thank you very much, Orla. Great to be here.
When I hear the CAO, I think back to my time, and to me it was just confusion because I don't think I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I did arts for a year in UCD and I dropped out of that and then went and got my second choice. I did my CAO again, obviously, and did journalism. But it was the luck of the draw, kind of. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's a weird time, isn't it? Are people more informed these days?
Excellent. Well, I suppose for some people, it's always the first time doing it, no matter how much we are informed. It's still very much a sense of, it can be very stressful for both, not only the student themselves, but also the family. I kind of feel the family are doing the Leaving Cert with the student as well, because when we are filling out the CAO, it is complex, especially the first time round, and it's all online and it's all within the remits of the students' responsibility themselves to fill it out. So those were days where we had the pen and paper and we were around the kitchen table filling it out as a family. It's up to the student now themselves to take that responsibility.
Yeah, and it's almost an individual
thing. So there are a lot of
thing.
Common mistakes, people can make when it's kind of restricted to that.
And what are we talking dates-wise this month? Because January is always CAO month in my mind.
Yes, it's kind of that pressure. They kind of come up to Christmas thinking we've a lot of time. Then all of a sudden it's like, bang, here we are. And not only have they the CAO, but then mocks are approaching quickly as well. So the 1st of February will be the main date.
Okay, 1st of February. All right, so you've a few weeks now. So talk us through what the common mistakes that people make when it comes to the CAO.
Sure. I suppose students often can make mistakes and it can have significant implications. The main one I kind of see is where students, I suppose, sometimes they list their courses based on like the predicted points.
Okay.
Rather than maybe what their true preference actually is.
Okay. So the biggest points at the top because they think they won't get that.
Exactly. Okay. But then if they do qualify, let's say for their lower one, or they could miss out maybe on what their dream one was because maybe they really wanted a course that was at a lower point, but they actually got the higher course points. So I'd always recommend to list their courses in order of genuine preference and interest. Yeah, 100%.
That's a good one. Okay. And what advice do you give at this stage of the process when it comes to even researching things? Should you really know what you want to do by now, or is it still a bit of a, I'll try this?
Yes, difficult question, Orla, definitely. But definitely what I would always remind them is that it's okay not to have everything figured out immediately. The CAO definitely is an important step. So what I would remind them to do is what would be important would be not to miss out on the key dates like the 1st of February, especially when there's things like restricted courses that need to be submitted by this particular date. Ignoring things like maybe entry requirements, look and dig a bit deeper, I'd say. I'd recommend what's actually required for each of the different courses, for each of the different universities, because that's important. So for example, what I'd say here, if you're interested in engineering, making sure they look at, is a higher level H4 in maths necessary for a particular course? Because not all universities and courses have the same requirements. They're different. So you may be eligible, let's say, for example, 1 degree in Waterford and SETU, where we're very lucky for, that you may not be eligible, maybe, let's say, for a new well in the University of Limerick. They're just two examples.
And that's all available on the different websites
all
of
available
the
on the different universities, exactly.
And when you say restricted courses, Liz, what do you mean by that?
So, for example, a course that may require an audition or maybe a portfolio, or even, for example, medicine, where you'd have to apply for a HPAT test or an assessment. So things that have that little bit extra need to be put in by the 1st of February.
Okay.
So what I would advise on that as well is if you're unsure about it, still stick it in anyway, because you can't add it in at a later date, but you can always take it away.
In your change of mind,
exactly.
Okay.
So again, you can always take away, but you can't add in.
And if you went for medicine, do you have to do the HPAT exam?
You do.
No matter if you don't get the, you do that after, before your points at the...
You do. They will
okay,
have,
so you have
that
to do
registration
that.
Is okay. Now open, so they would need to register for the HPAT now.
Wow. Okay. Gosh, it's a stressful year, isn't it? And that's just adding to the stress, all this.
Very stressful, especially if you're studying for the HPAT as well, or you're going for an audition. They're all little added extras that students need to bear in mind.
Do you find, Liz, that there's almost trends for universities that people want to go to? Do you find some years it might be one university and the next, 5 years later, suddenly another university is the most popular? Or do you find it gets like that? I know when I was in college, it was all about UCD and
Yeah, no, it does have the element. And I have to say, we're very lucky here at the moment that we've set you quite close in Waterford.
Yeah, and Carlow as well.
And
yeah.
Carlow. And then there is actually some campuses in Wexford as well for some courses, especially the business department down there. But like that, again, I think when it comes to where you go as a student, it's very important to consider, I suppose, the balance of the course of what you'd like to study. I think that's really important, as well as where you feel you belong within that university.
Yes, exactly. And also, I suppose, your own, you know, barriers, be it money or lack of transport. You know, I hear so many people saying that people are travelling up and down to college, and I feel a bit sorry for those people that they're not getting that full college experience, you know?
Absolutely. I do think financial factors have to come into place there, especially with families, because it is an expensive time of year. So there is that sort of living at home versus the moving out. Staying at home could save thousands, and you may be more financially cost effective to get a car. Again, the accommodation, that's another issue as well. That can be very competitive at different universities, and that might sway people over one university than to another. But I'd always recommend as well just looking into those, especially for families, those grants, those supports, especially like the Susie Grant.
Yeah.
Even scholarships. An awful lot of universities have a lot of different scholarships that people don't really know about. They might be familiar with sports, or they may be familiar with an academic. But if you look on their websites and go to the various different scholarships, there are a variety of different ones that you might be suited to that you maybe didn't realise.
That's great. What if you don't know what you want to do at all, Liz?
Yes, good question. Very confusing. Very confusing. But look, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be relying on one course either. Do you know that sort of way? Like, don't underestimate alternative routes. So there is support and help out there. They can obviously talk to professionals like myself. They can also go to school, talk to teachers. They can talk to guidance counsellors, parents. I'd also recommend as well, looking at their strengths, maybe looking at subjects of what they enjoy, and maybe careers that might suit their personality. They'd be the three things, because at the moment it's very hard, as I said before, to know exactly what you want to do. But if you can really focus on what you enjoy for the now, and if you are applying for the CAO, a good level 8 degree with good opportunities can take you very far.
Yeah, very true. There's some personality tests that you can take as well, isn't there, that'll show you the sort of traits and the sort of careers that would suit you.
There is. There's a good few out there as well that you could do, have a little bit of research in that might suit you as well, like the psychometric assessments as such, to give you direction maybe in if you're stronger, maybe in which areas of strength where you're liability-wise as well, and you could focus on.
Yeah, I remember doing that before and being quite taken aback by some of the strengths that I had, things I would never have thought of before. And therefore, that kind of lends you towards the sort of degree or even, you know, one-year course that you might be interested to. So what advice even would you give to parents who are in this situation and are seeing their kids that might be confused by this AO or don't know what they want to apply for? What advice would you give, Liz?
I would definitely give advice to go in and talk to their teachers and reflect on what their subjects are, what they would like. I'd also maybe inform parents, maybe just to stay informed, but maybe attending the open days, check the entry requirements. And again, if they wish to make an appointment or bring people to see a private person to have that one-on-one time, it is very successful. I find very successful having that one-on-one time with students that come and see me. Okay. They do get a lot out of that time.
Great stuff. And the best way to see you is to go onto your social media and have a look at what you do. You have a website, of course. It's LizKellyCareers.ie. But if you search for Liz Kelly Careers on Instagram, Facebook, all of those sort of things, you'll find Liz there as well with some great advice as well. A busy time for you, Liz, I'm sure, as well.
Very busy time at the moment. It's exciting. I love this time of year because I really see the students, and I really see at their age, their ambitious, their dreams, their goals, and they're confused about how will I get there or what they want to do, and they all have various reasons why they're doing different courses. And it's lovely to be able to guide them and support them and let them know it's okay, you'll get there, and to give them focus.
Yes,
because at the end of the day, it is an awful lot of pressure on them this
of
year.
Totally. Well, listen, Liz, thanks a million for joining me this morning and giving that great advice. LizKellyCareers.ie or on social media as well. Liz, thanks a million.
Thank you very much, Orla. Thank you for having me.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's Beat 102-103. He's over there. You know him by now. His name is Brian. He does the movies.
I do.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I've actually been to cinema a lot of times lately.
I was just about to say, it never rains but it pours.
Yeah, and even when I was at the cinema, it was like all these trailers for things.
Oh, like what?
Going into Oscar season.
Now, can I just say, I watched lots of Golden Globe clips, but watched it going, what movie's that? What movie's that?
Okay.
So, Best Actress went to Avatar actress.
Zoe Saldana.
What is she in?
Perez.
Okay, well, what is on Netflix. What is Zoe in? Amelia Perez. Okay.
Yeah.
That's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Right now?
Right now.
Okay, I'm going to watch that.
It's mostly in kind of Spanish.
Okay, Amelia Perez. I like a movie with subtitles, so that'll do me. Oh, this is the one that people are going crazy because no one who's Mexican is in the actual movie.
Oh, is it?
So people are having a bit of not enjoying that. Okay. Kate Winslet, what was she up for? The one about the photographer, maybe?
Don't know.
Okay. And there was another person and I was like, what? Adrian Brody. Tell me.
The Brutalist.
That looks brilliant.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet now, but I saw the trailer for it. That was one of the trailers I saw last night.
And it looks like you'd like to see it.
It looks like it's going to be one of those, like, damn. Like, Adrian Brody is one of those weird actors where he's been, like, an A-list for so long. But, like, it's like, what was he in? He was in The Pianist. And then he's in, like, so many other things, but he's always in like a fun role. He's in like a load of Wes Anderson things. Adrian Brody, you know his face, but like at the same time, you can't be like, oh yeah, these are all the Adrian Brody movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think he just takes these ones that he wants to do. So that's always a good sign of an actor. Do you know?
Okay. We talk about Better Man.
Of course.
And this is what Brian went to see, but he also saw in the meantime, what are the other two that
Nosferatu and A Real Pain.
Okay, but we're going to do Better Man this week. It is, of course, a biographical musical film co-produced and directed by Michael Gracey. It's about Robbie Williams, but in it, Robbie is portrayed by an CG animated chimpanzee. And I didn't know that bit.
At all?
Not at all.
So you just went to watch the trailer and you were so confused.
Oh, he's a monkey. I didn't realise that. And he was on Graham Norton on New Year's Eve. It's the last bit that I saw of Graham Norton. Yeah. He got up and he sang and he talked a little bit about his biopic and I went, oh, he has a biopic.
Yeah.
Will it come to Netflix? But no, it's a huge...
It's actually a big movie.
Okay, will we have a listen?
Yeah.
This is quite quirky.
I'm Robbie Williams. I'm one of the biggest pop stars in the world. This is my story, but I'm not going to tell it in an ordinary way because I don't see myself how others see me.
For the next 2 hours, your ass is mine!
To be honest, I've always been a little less evolved. I don't want to rock, so let's take it from the top, shall we?
I sit and wait.
My dad was well enamored by the stars of the day.
You can't learn it. You're either born with it or you're a nobody.
There's an angel.
Don't want to be a nobody.
Contemplate my fate.
You're enough.
The places where we go when we're gray and old.
You got in? You're in that band?
Hey, that!
Look around the table. In 5 years, we're all going to hate each other.
Oh, which one of those is that? I've ticked that, eh? That feels very acted, very theatrical. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you see, this is the thing. So Michael Gracey also did The Greatest Showman.
Yes.
And The Greatest Showman, I feel, is the perfect amount of... Do you know the way with some like West Side Story and stuff? It's a very like cinematic version of a musical.
Mm.
This feels very much like... A stage musical brought to life. If that makes sense. Like,
no, I do get. I can hear it.
It's so performative. Mm. You know, and it's the editing and the transitions and stuff between the shots are just phenomenal. Like myself and David went to it, and we were both talking about like the editing. Because it's something you don't notice unless you really look at, and it's so skillfully done that they'll use like a light turning off in a part of a room to transition to a different part of time.
Oh, I love that sort of thing.
It's like, it's so well done. Yeah. Like, you know?
So it's for both fans of Robbie, fans of a little bit of, you know, pop history and people who love their cinematography and their editing.
Yeah, it's just
like
a fun movie. Like, if you like The Greatest Showman, I feel like you'll just like this. And if you know Robbie Williams songs, you'll be bopping along. You know?
So, you know, lots of actors in this, but we don't we don't really recognise any of the names. But the only name you will recognise is Robbie Williams, because he is playing the voice of the chimpanzee.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Like, there's some people you'd like, I think I've seen them in something, but it's like, it's kind of like a more nuanced kind of role kind of a thing. They really went for like a smaller kind of role. So it's no like they turn around and it's Gary Barlow playing somebody else kind of a thing. Do you know, like in like Bohemian Rhapsody, there's like Mike Myers just kind of cameos or whatever in it. Like,
now, Alison Steadman is in it from Gavin and Stacey. That's the only name that I recognise in it. She is the mother, Pamela, in Gavin and Stacey.
I've never watched Gavin and Stacey.
You said this before. You need to watch. In fact, I'm rewatching it at the moment. Anyway, where do we begin with Better Man? Are we, as we heard in the clip there, him talking about his father? Robbie Williams has spoken about his father a lot in the past and what an influence he was on him, but also how he's almost an entertainer in his own right.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, I've noticed a running theme with these kind of things is that they have an issue with their dads. Like, same with Elton John, same with Freddie Mercury. It's like they're trying to, their dad have one expectation of how they should live.
Yeah.
And it's like daddy issues seems to be a, and then the grandmother stepping in seems to be a major thing as well.
And is that where we start?
It's, yeah, Stoke and Trent. He's a small monkey and he's just like, he's cheeky, but like he's kind of like, his dad is an entertainer. And well, he had like dreams to be an entertainer, and he dreams to be an entertainer because his dad dreams to be an entertainer. Okay. And then, I suppose it's kind of spoilery, but it's like the first 10 minutes of it. So it's like his dad ends up walking out on the fam.
Okay.
And then they end up just, I don't know, it's the whole movie is kind of him chasing the praise of everybody around him, like, you know? And it's very sad.
And you're learning stuff that you didn't know before about Robbie, or understanding him better?
Like, a lot of the things are like, these are things that happened in like the late 90s and like 2002. It's like, I would have been like six.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been like, hey, is Robbie Williams struggling with alcohol issues at the time?
Are you a Robbie fan, or were you a Robbie fan?
I'm kind of loving Angels instead. Do you know what I mean? No, I do like Rock DJ, Let Me Entertain You. Like, they're bangers. Like, and when they come on in this, like Rock DJ especially, like, slaps. It's good.
And re-recorded
so
for
hard.
This film as well. Yeah. All the songs are just to fit in with the emotion film as
they
well.
They have that kind of like Greatest Showman theatre to it as well. It's not just normal, it's not just like lashed out. It's like, it's a whole, like, even just listen to the soundtrack, because I know you'll be like, I'm going to go see this in the cinema. You won't go see it in the cinema, but listen to the soundtrack.
I will.
Because it's good.
Okay.
And they sing My Way in it as well.
Oh, lovely. I do.
Yeah,
like
I love My Way.
Yeah, I do love a bit.
There's a lot of that kind of crooner thing, because Robbie Williams has a whole thing where before he performs, he like kisses Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin photo thing.
Okay.
So he has this kind of dream of being like one of them, one of the like the greats kind of a thing.
Brilliant.
And it's just a...
Did you enjoy it?
I had a great time. Like, the monkey thing, when I saw it first, I was like, what's that about? Right. And to explain it for someone that
a performing monkey.
Well, that's what I kind of thought. And like, the more it went through, is like, he was like, you when you become famous, you stop progressing at the age you become famous.
Okay.
And for him, it was 15. So he feels like he's unevolved compared to everybody else. Like, he never got to have those kind of...
He was 15.
15 when they take that started. And I think even it could be a whole thing, because some of the songs, they're talking about oohs and ahs. It's like, if he just sees himself as walking around the place and going, ooh, ah, it's like, that's kind of like a monkey, like a performing monkey, do you know? So I feel like all those things is kind of... And like,
and it works, does it?
Yeah, because he has this whole thing that he has to be it. And I feel like if you're not it, you're nothing. And like, he sees himself as nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, he's just kind of like not even worth it. So he's like, it's just a monkey in like a people world or whatever. But
okay, I get it.
It's an interesting way of seeing yourself, do you know?
Okay. Let's black pudding it. So
I would give it, I haven't thought about this. I would give it like a 9.
9 black puddings out of 10.
It's completely up my alley, though. It's it's a musical, and I know the songs. It's fun. It's sad. It's like really sad. Like, because even there was an interview I saw there, and it was on Graham Norton as well, and he's saying that like the first 45 minutes are like his uprising?
No. Upbringing?
The upbringing, yes. Yeah, uprising, yeah, that's what I was thinking. And then like after that it becomes train spotting. It's like, yeah, it's kind of that. Like,
all right,
like
I'm
it's
in.
Just his downfall into depression and drugs and
fame.
His like, fame and the struggle of fame.
About what fame did for him as well. Okay, good stuff. Have you watched by any chance the documentary series about boy bands that was on BBC before Christmas?
No, I haven't.
Robbie features a lot in it, and he is very wise and talks a lot about contacting other boy bands when they saw some of the people struggling within those bands.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I find that these people that did struggle the most always seem to be the ones that come out and were like, Justin Bieber is a massive advocate for looking after like young artists like Billie Eilish and stuff. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, what's he doing? It's like, he had the worst time. Yeah. And I feel like people can never apologize enough to what happened to that lad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, so 9 Black Puddings out of 10 for A Better Man, the Robbie Williams biopic. It is out in cinemas now, and I know Brian is going to laugh at me, but I am definitely going to try and see this on the big screen.
Yeah, I believe you. I'm winking. I believe you.
By the way, we were thinking, what was Kate Winslet up for in a Golden Globe? She was up for Best Actress for Lee, which is also available on streaming media, I think, as well. And it's about life of photographer Lee Miller. So that looks good, too.
Okay, I don't know.
All right, you've lots of things to watch. I'm kind of jealous of you.
I'm very excited. Like, there's so much. I still haven't seen the new Mufasa.
Oh, yeah, and the music is everywhere.
All I see
now
is, my brother. It's Lin-Manuel Miranda does all the songs, isn't it?
Oh, so you can hear it.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to see that too.
Good stuff. In the meantime, Better Man, 9 Black Puddings out of 10. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
That was a lot of teas. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. It's one tea.
No, there was a lot.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.